Silence.
Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio.
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 75 of Nerd Pride Radio. 75, the number of years that Marvel Comics has been around. Yeah, in fact, the first issue of Marvel Comics just over 75 years ago featured the android Human Torch. Go figure. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones, and I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my noggin anymore. Our sponsor this week is Greenwald & Son Fire Ant Outlet for all your fire ant needs. All right. Let's get straight into it. I always start off with the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I put it down on my master list in my handy-dandy pocket mod, and then the best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. And what's on my master list this week? Well, first it's time to visit my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master. I've got 12-sided die.
Role-playing games, video games, card games, if it fits on my gaming table, then I am here to share it with you. And this week, the gaming table is all about me. It's all about me and Pathfinder and my character in Pathfinder and how much fun I'm having. What happened this week? Well, actually, what happened several weeks ago, probably a couple months ago, because we play every 2 weeks, is we had some big meeting that we were going to have with our characters. We were going to settle up a contract for our group. We were going to come up with a new name. We had all this stuff that we had to do. And as we were setting up to get to that, everyone's doing their little role playing of waking up in the morning, getting to where they're going, this kind of stuff. And just for absolutely no good reason I can remember, I've said that my character didn't come home last night. My character, Dothan, she's the bard in the group. She's 16-year-old half-orc girl. And I just wrote in that, oh, yeah, if anyone had bothered to check her room, she apparently didn't spend the night there last night. No one knows where she was. And then she shows up in the morning, and she appears and, oh, finds out everyone's out for this meeting, so she goes and joins them. And got a couple of questions, but no one really pushed it too much. And so my question is, where was Dothan that night? And the best part about this was I didn't know. I had no idea where she was that night. All I knew was that I wanted to put in a little bit of mystery. It's an old game mastering trick that, you know, I just make things happen. And then later, by saying that, oh, this happened, well, now I'm forced to come up with a good reason why. I'm forced to justify that and make something really cool and really interesting that fits in. And this was one that I created a situation where, okay, it's significant that Dothan didn't spend the night at the inn. It's significant that she was gone somewhere. And so the question is, well, where? And now I'm forced to do, because what I felt like I wasn't doing enough character development stuff. There's all this background stuff that you can do in the game behind the scenes. I mean, yes, you know, we have our missions and we go out and there's really good role play during the missions and we have really exciting battles and good interactions with people. But also, you can do stuff behind the scenes and kind of come up with your own personal stories for here's what happens when we're not actually out, you know, battling the undead or whatever. And one of the players in our group, Lucy, Lucy plays Dwyn, who is a fighter, now cleric. Dwyn is one of my favorite characters of all time. She's just really well put together. She's anyway, I don't need to dwell on this. I love Dwyn. I love the character of her. I love her voyage of discovery that this character is taking. And Lucy has put in tons of time on what she calls her too long didn't read stories, where she writes up just some narrative of what happens with Dwyn when she visits her family and her process of discovery. And as she decides to take on levels of cleric and she's discovering religion, she actually put in a whole section on the rules, the tenets and prayers and whatever of her faith. And I mean, it's really involved stuff and forced me to want to step up my game is what happened. I'm like, I should be able to do that kind of stuff too. My character has to have, you know, stuff going on. There has, I don't know. I was jealous and I just wanted that kind of experience and depth, because it's times that we have those role-playing moments and the really intense character-driven stuff. Well, that's when I feel most connected to my character. That's when I feel most into the game, is when I'm really immersed in not just her personality, but her world and the other characters around her. And I know everybody so well that it's a lot easier to slip into that role and react in real time the way Dothan would react, to kind of a method acting sort of thing, to be able to just feel the character and know that. Anyway, I'm babbling on. This is getting all touchy feely. But anyway, so I left this blank space in my narrative, and I was forced to go in and fill it out. And so I came up with just a general outline. I'm like, okay, where would I be that doesn't involve any of the other characters in the group and doesn't also involve anything that's going to be, you know, because it's going to take me a while to write it up, so nothing could have happened that's going to immediately impact gameplay, because, you know, by the time I get it all written, some time has passed in-game, a few days, and so therefore it has to be something that doesn't have an immediate impact, even though it's got some character development stuff in it. And I got excited about the idea. I came up with this story of, you know, Dothan went out wandering, she winds up meeting a new friend, they hit it off, and they spend time together, and kind of share stuff, and she opens up about her problems and the things she's worried about. And then this was where the real kicker was for me, is that her friend suggests, well, why don't we go visit Madame Vashti, and Madame Vashti could do a reading for you and maybe help you with your problems. Maybe you give you some sort of solution, which I'm not actually expecting a solution. To me, I'm thinking to myself, well, taking her to a fortune teller, now I can turn the fortune teller part over to the game master and say, hey, Darks, what happens here? And this allows him to give some ominous clues to what's going to happen, and for him to use it as kind of a plot hook to I don't know, set things in motion, give us clues and guide us in a certain direction. And this is, I mean, I was just giving an opening for him to do whatever he wanted to make things move in a direction that he was happy with. And then afterwards, she goes back with her friend, they meet her family, and they spend the evening there, and basically Dothan just is there late enough that, the family invites her to stay the night, and she sleeps there, and then heads home in the morning. And that was the entirety of it. She meets a new friend, she spends the whole evening with her, stays the night, and, oh, in the middle of it, they get a fortune-telling thing done. And so I suggest this to Darks, and he says, that sounds great. He says, in fact, let me get out my Harrow deck, and we'll actually do a real reading. And so I'm excited, because the Harrow deck is the Pathfinder version of the Tarot deck. It's got all sorts of cards, and they have specific in-game meaning that it's tied to the mechanics of your ability scores, your alignment, and you do a proper reading, and you get past, present, and future, and there's a whole process to it. And it's very mystical sounding and really cool. And I didn't know a whole lot about it other than, I mean, a real basic outline. But Pat said he was going to do a real Harrow reading with the actual cards, because he owns the deck. And so I find that cool. All right. So a few weeks go by, and I still haven't written up anything, and Pat hasn't gotten back to me about a Harrow reading yet. And so I just drop him a reminder. And when I say a few weeks go by, again, remember, we only play every 2 weeks. So, I mean, a couple of game sessions have gone by. And so I just send him a reminder. It's been the holidays and lots of stuff going on. And so I send him a reminder. He says, oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. I want to do this. In fact, if you've got time, I want to do this live on video chat. Whoa, whoa. All right. This is cool. because I hadn't, I'd just been expecting that, he'd just give me, some basic guidelines of, hey, here's what the reading came up with. Here's a couple of ominous things. Work that into your narrative. Go. But no, instead, we get on roll 20. We turn on the video chat portion of it, and he's got the deck in hand, and he just deals out a Harrow reading right there in front of me, and he interprets the cards as they fall. And it was spectacular. It was really cool. All right, well, what question do you have for the Harrow deck? And it took me, I don't even know why it took me so long to figure it out. I had to get myself back in the mindset of my character at that point in time in the game. And I suddenly realized, oh, well, of course, she's worried about her uncle, and her uncle's really sick, and that's what this whole thing is about, is this necromancer's father who has cursed Ilion, and now he's sick, and we don't know how to lift this curse, and no traditional cures work, and regular magic doesn't work, and we don't know what we're doing, and so I'm worried about him. That's where my question is how do we find a cure for Ilion? That's what I want to know. And when I say the whole thing is about that, I mean this little subplot. This is something that I think Dave worked that into Ilion's character right from the beginning, that he just wanted, a fighter with no constitution. He wanted a fighter who was sick for some reason and came up with this story. And so this is just a subplot, because our characters are connected. This is just a subplot between me and him, and we've kind of drawn others into it as we go. It's not the main plot of the story, but man, it's been tied in really effectively. And so I asked that question. And okay, well, I'm going to flip through the deck and tell me when to stop. And oh, here? All right, cool. Flips over the card, and I don't know if he's setting me up for this. I don't know if he's palming cards. I'm watching him on video. I mean, but the card he pops up with is the sickness. He goes, that's the roll card. That's the central theme of this reading, is the sickness. I'm like, well, yeah, no shit. We just, oh my God. And so I'm freaked out already. And if he set that up, then he got me good, because I never questioned it for a moment. Like, say, I'm watching his hands, I'm watching the cards go, and oh my God, there's the sickness. How cool is that? And then he starts laying out the reading, and we do this whole thing, and everything was really appropriate. And later, I looked up a bit more, because I'm fascinated by the Harrow deck myself. I'm going to go spend the $20 and buy myself a Harrow deck. And not only that, but my character, who is just absolutely, she has, like me, flights of fancy, where something catches her eye and she gets herself really invested in it. And then, maybe it's not a long-term thing, but she likes to be, likes to have a hand in lots of different things, and likes to be knowledgeable and good at enough stuff. And so for her, she's also fascinated with the Harrow deck, and is going to look into possibly being able to do Harrow readings herself in the future, which I think is totally cool. But anyway, I looked it up, and it turns out that, there's basic rules for how to do a Harrow reading within the game and what game effects it has. And I don't have the actual handbook, so I'm just kind of going by what I could find online, and I didn't read into a lot of detail, but I got the basic outline of it. And yeah, he just did. He played the cards as they fell, and he did the reading according to the basic guidelines. And of course, he's got some GM knowledge, and he, has all the rest of the books, so he knows where this mission's going. But it was really cool and really ominous, and it was scary and yet hopeful. And so, okay. So I was thrilled with that. And so now I took it, and this was the hard part. I then wrote all of this up. So if anyone's interested in getting a sample of my writing, you are free to go visit my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums and go jump into the Rune Lords section. That's where we do all of our game stuff. And it's a story called The Harrowing. And it just ballooned out of control. It has been, we did the reading, I think, Monday night, and now today is Friday. And I've been every night, every day, I've been spending, 2-3 hours trying to put this thing together. And finally I come up with this massive, and I talk about it like it's some magnum opus, but, it's like 5,000 words. It's something like that. It's like a really thorough term paper from high school. It's not a, but it was just fascinating. The ability to get into the character that deeply, and it actually forced me to do a little bit of research into what it is I'm actually talking about and where I'm going, and I got more immersed in the world, and it taught me some things about the game, which if you have time for it, even if it's just a little vignette, you don't even have to write up something huge. Because I've done little ones like this, and I've gotten the same effect, although never quite on this scale. But if you can do some game writing for your character, I've mocked people in the past who do that much over, you know, who put in so much behind the scenes stuff when, you know, to me it's like, well, but it's about the game. It's about the playing of it. I mean, if you want to write a story, just write a damn story. What, you know, well, this is role playing. Well, it turns out that this enhances my role playing. This was just an interstitial kind of thing. It's just an in-between scene, and it didn't need to be so big and so detailed. But it was a good exercise for me because I learned so much about what this character is and the world that she's living in and where her headspace is. And it helps with the role play. I was thrilled with that. But also, and this is a little side note, I've always wanted to be a writer. I've always enjoyed writing. I've always thought I was, you know, at least decent at it. I've always been very jealous of my brother, who has actually now written 2 novels. The second one, by the way, is actually available, and you need to go get it on Amazon. And I think I've already told you about that, but it's out there. So please go look up Kyle Jones. Go look up his Norn's Quest saga, and he's got 2 books out there. Get them. And I would be telling you the names of the books because the first one is the Norn's Quest, and the second one is oh, it's that dwarven name. Damn it, I can't. I'll have to go look it up. I'm sorry. I'm embarrassed. Sorry, Kyle. But I own it. I haven't read it yet because I've got 1 more book in line before I read yours. But I own it, and I'm ready, and I'll be giving you guys a review of that soon. But anyway, I've always been jealous of that, and I've always wanted to write. And I've written a few short stories, and I've tried doing things, but I've got some novels in my head that just are begging to be written. I've got one that's really, really begging to be written, and I've just never been able to get started. And this one, having the characters already available for me, because it's a game and we've been playing this game for how long, and there's all this background material that's available that I didn't write. It's just there for me. And having all of that for me was a really good motivator because I knew what the characters were and I knew what the setting was. And now I just need to tell this story in it. And since I was on a deadline, I'm forced, I have to come up with something to fill in this gap I left there. It was really cool. And I remember my brother writing his first book was commenting on how tough it was to write small, how hard it was for him to limit himself because, I mean, he's a lawyer. He writes a lot as part of his job. I mean, this man writes all the time. And he was talking about how hard it is to not just fill up pages and pages and pages with the littlest thing. And I never quite got that because my writing style is often a lot more brief than that. But this time, yeah, in a setting where I know and love the characters and I know what I'm going for and I'm motivated to actually get it done, I was writing forever. And every time it was a challenge to okay, look, I can just summarize this section. How about we just say, hey, they talked for hours? Because you don't need the details of every moment of this conversation. I mean, it's 2 teenage girls talking to each other. Let me just hit the high points and move on. It was really tough to summarize because, yeah, I just wanted to fill up pages. And that was the other thing that it did for me. In addition to the game stuff, on the writing side, it was like, oh, hey, I can write stuff. I could do this. I could actually, you know, stop just developing things and actually just start writing things. And that was a lot of this one was that look, all right, I know all my stuff. Why don't I just write it? Because before I allow myself to get really distracted with the whole idea of, because I like to write a lot of science fiction. I love science fiction. And the danger of writing science fiction for me is, see how I did that? I hate it when I do the in between stuff. And so that time I took my and I changed it to an of. See, that was clever, right? All right. Anyway, I'm sorry. That's just me being self-conscious. And, anyway, it was a lesson, and people have said this a million times, that, look, if you want to write, you just write. Just do it. That's the whole point of National Novel Writing Month, is just write. It doesn't matter what you write. It doesn't matter if it's good. It doesn't matter if it's bad. You write, and then you find what works out of that. I mean, if you write, you know, 20,000 words, and you only keep the best 1,000 of them because this is the only good section you wrote, then good. Well, at least that's better than not having written a thing. You know what I mean? And that's, and so it was really kind of cool for me. And I'm really, really happy I did this. And I don't know, it was, I mean, it's intimidating now to think of doing it again. I don't know if I'm going to do any more Too Long Didn't Read stories for this game, at least right away. Obviously I will. I have to at some point, but, it took a lot out of me. So, but it was so educational and so much fun. And we're going to play again next week. And I am just so hyped to get moving with this story. In fact, now the next thing is after I post it up, Eliahad goes in there and he reads it and he tells me, oh, that's awesome. Great. Boy, especially after the stuff that Talvin just did in this other thread. I'm like, oh God, I've been avoiding those threads. Now there's good stuff. Damn it. Cause I had to avoid the other role play threads because I knew if I got involved in role playing there, I wouldn't work on this one. And so I've been kind of letting the other one slide until I got this finished. Well, now I'm finished. And now, oh God, now there's more good stuff in there. I can't wait. I'm really excited to just keep going with this game. And so now I got to go get caught up on those because I think my character's even directly involved in the activities going on. And I haven't even read it yet because I was avoiding it. So I'm going to get on that. But anyway, hey, gaming is going well. I love Pathfinder. I love Pathfinder so much. Dothan was looking into the Harrow deck, and she's going to buy herself one, and she's going to, whenever she can get third level spells, she's going to take the spell for it so that she can do Harrow readings. And then I even saw, they have the Harrower as an actual prestige class. And I'm reading up on the Harrower, and I'm like, wow, this meshes really, really well with a bard character. Man, this prestige class meshes really, really well with Dothan. She would really enjoy doing this. I mean, it would take away from some of her bard abilities, but the spellcasting is still there. And, oh, this would be super cool. And it's like, I don't, you know, part of me was thinking, yeah, I'm not really going to do this, but just thinking of it and moving in that direction just looked like a cool idea. And then I saw that, I'm sorry. Harrowers only get 2 skill points per level. Oh, no, I'm out. Sorry, no, Dothan needs way more skills than that. I can't do it. It's cool. I mean, I'll do the harrowing. I like the deck, and I'll get the skill. But again, it'll be like everything else Dothan does. She's not going to commit to being a harrower full-time. No. But she'll certainly learn how to harrow, and she'll learn how to read the deck, and she'll have a great time with it. But anyway, that's I told you, this was going to be all about me. This is all about me. As if this entire show isn't all about me. Well, at least the first half is. I'll give you guys a chance in the second half of the show. But enough of my gaming table. Whew, that was tiring. You know what we haven't done in a long, long time? We haven't done the word of the week. And actually, this week's word is actually a punctuation mark, which has a name, so technically it's a word too. Two words. But the punctuation mark is the dog's bollocks. You didn't know that was a punctuation mark? Yeah, neither did I. And not only is it a punctuation mark, but it's a punctuation mark that you can find in the Oxford English Dictionary. It's official is what this thing is. It's outdated now. People don't actually use it anymore. But the dog's bollocks is so named because it is a colon followed by a long dash or a hyphen, but long dash usually. Go ahead and write that down. Write down or type it. Type it. You're sitting at a computer, aren't you? Go ahead and type in a colon followed by a long dash and tell me what emoticon you've just created. That's right. You've created the cock and balls. So, I'm sorry. Is that crude? I probably shouldn't say cock and balls on the podcast, should I? Doesn't matter. Anyway, that is why this punctuation mark is known as the dog's bollocks. It's because, even back 100 years ago, they understood emoticons and they realized exactly what that looked like when they did it. But what was it used for? It was kind of like a supercolon, which also sounds dirty, but isn't. It's an accentuated colon. It was described, and I think this was from the Oxford English Dictionary definition. I should have written all this down, but was described as being indicative of a long restful pause, the kind of thing that nowadays I use ellipses for, and I use ellipses way too much. Sometimes I use the long dash for it. Sometimes I use ellipses. I usually mix those two up simply because I don't want too many ellipses in a row. So sometimes, yeah, I alternate them. But it's the kind of thing that I would indicate with ellipses. And for just in case you need an explanation, the ellipses is the 3 dots in a row. So it's something that indicates a longer comma, a longer pause, longer than a colon, longer than a semicolon. The ellipses indicates that longer pause, that trailing off till, okay, now we start again. And apparently the dog's bollocks was once used to indicate something very, very similar and has now since gone out of fashion, which is too bad because I just like saying dog's bollocks. So that is my official word of the week. You guys really should find a place in your writing to use a dog's bollocks. I haven't done it myself. I don't know if I've got the balls for it, as it were, but I'm thinking about it. It's fascinating. Oh, and due credit, I learned about the dog's bollocks from my son, Aiden, who saw it on a show called Vsauce, and I did not watch that episode of Vsauce, but Vsauce is a YouTube channel where hosts come in and they talk really interesting and badass science stuff, and the episodes I have seen have mostly been really cool and really educational. There's different hosts, and some of them I like better than others, but it's a great show. And speaking of Vsauce, haha, see how I did a segue there and then ruined it by mentioning that it's a segue? The episode I saw most recently of Vsauce, I'm sorry, which we'll do on the Science Corner.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
That's right, on this show, the soothing voice of William Shatner means you have to walk away now or you might be in danger of learning something. Here on the Science Corner, I'm going to talk about that episode of Vsauce I saw. I'm not going to go on because you should actually just watch it yourself. But I was just fascinated by the idea that they did, hey, what if the Kool-Aid Man were real? Could he break down a brick wall? And the short answer is, yeah, he totally could, and he wouldn't even have to run very fast to do it. Because apparently, the Kool-Aid Man, if he were proportional to pitcher of Kool-Aid, if you took an actual pitcher of Kool-Aid and then scaled it up to 6 feet tall, thus the Kool-Aid Man, and put legs on it, obviously, then he would weigh 11,000 pounds. And even at a fast walking pace, 11,000 pounds is more than enough to break through a standard brick wall. I mean, without even having to try. And then you say, yes, but then wouldn't he shatter? And it turns out that when you scale him up to 6 feet tall, the Kool-Aid Man's walls are 3.5 inches thick. When you have glass that's 3.5 inches thick, you can break down walls with it, and you're not going to shatter. You might get some cracks, but then maybe you make them out of safety glass, was their suggestion. And then they went into long detail about the real dangers to the Kool-Aid Man is not shattering when he goes through the wall, but rather he's in danger of losing his Kool-Aid, which they equate to being his blood, that running through a wall, not only is he going to get a bunch of debris inside the open hole in his head, but he's also going to lose a whole bunch of his lifeblood fluid here and probably go into shock and get really woozy afterwards. So he could break through a wall, but only once. So I thought it was fascinating. I'm sharing it with you mostly to tell you that, hey, check out Vsauce if you've never seen it on YouTube. Really cool channel. These guys are great. And then that brings me to, oh, by the way, other stuff I'm watching on Roku. Did I tell you guys that I cut the cable? Did I tell you that I finally got rid of cable? I know I've been talking about it for ages. I can't remember if I told you or not. I just want to say that, yes, finally cut the cable. We got rid of cable TV, and once we did it, we dumped the cable TV portion, but kept our internet service, and in fact bumped up our internet service to the next level, because we've been in danger of going over our data for how long. Oh, that's right. I did a rage about it a while back. I remember that now. And having done all that, I'm saving over $50 a month. Holy crow. Oh, I'm so glad I finally did this. And it's been an adjustment period, but it's been kind of cool. And we've got all sorts of stuff we're watching. I mean, I'm still watching X-Files and then following along with the X-Files Files podcast with Kumail Nanjiani. We've been watching some Doctor Who. My wife and I have gotten into Parenthood, which is kind of a good background show, and it's kind of one that she watches if I'm not available. She'll watch it without me, because it turns out that I can pick up only every third episode, and I'm still following along and really enjoying it. Parenthood is, it's a show that every episode takes you to some horrible low where you go, oh no, I can't, no, no. And then within the same episode, at least once, they'll also give you some moment of joy when you are so happy that everything's worked out for them. You get really emotionally invested in these characters. And whether it's a really low or a really high, it works really hard to make you cry at least once per episode. It's really, really good about that. And let's see, what else am I watching on there? Oh, American Horror Story. We're watching Coven. So we're watching the third season. And American Horror Story Coven is no different than the first two seasons, that it is really powerful acting with a fair bit of overacting thrown in there. It's very melodrama style, and some of the motivations make absolutely no sense, but everything is just hyped. Everything is just – they never operate below a level of about 9 or 10, and it's just fun. We're just having a great time with American Horror Story. I really like it. I love Jessica Lange. She's great. That woman is a powerhouse on the screen. And I don't care. I don't care what stupid thing she's in. Watching her chew up the scenery in everything she does on this show, awesome. So it's good fun. And again, you gotta ignore the stupidity of it. There's lots of dumb things in it, but who cares? It's a great story. It's great fun. What else have we been watching? Oh, and we even picked up a couple of sitcoms that been watching Raising Hope and just started watching Malcolm in the Middle. I think we're going to watch that with our kids. I've never seen Malcolm in the Middle. I heard it was a great show. I heard it was a really funny sitcom. And we never watched it when it was on, ever. I mean, literally, last night was the first time we watched it. We watched the first episode. And we got like 10 minutes in and we're like, oh, God, we got to call the kids in here. So we started over and we let the kids watch a few minutes with us. And then we said, you guys don't have to stick around. You guys can go back to what you were doing. Don't worry about it. And then after another 10 minutes, we're like, oh, Jesus. No, we've got to call them back. This is, you know what? So we think we're going to watch this as a family show for a little bit. But this is only one episode, literally one episode. For all I know, it may get old really fast, or you know, we may get tired of it for whatever reason. I have no idea. But I've heard it's a good show. And so we're enjoying that one. And did I say Raising Hope? Yeah, Raising Hope is, I don't know. I really like Raising Hope. It's funny. I mean, you're going to... You know, except for making fun of the old lady with Alzheimer's, but even that, they make that funny too, because she is spectacular. What? Or why am I drawing a blank on her name? Oh, come on. Come on, you know who I'm talking about. The old woman on Raising Hope. What? She's been on the Comedy Central roast before. This is going to drive me crazy. Remember when I told you I'd do this? I blank on something. I'm going to power through this one. Cloris Leachman. It's Cloris Leachman. That's who it is. Oh, see? I powered through it. I'm not senile yet. Cloris Leachman is brilliant on this, as she is in all sorts of stuff. And what I'm also surprised with is Martha Plimpton, who plays the mom on Raising Hope. I like her on this one. She's funny. I have never liked Martha Plimpton. There's just something about her. I saw her in – the first time I remember seeing her in anything was in that really weird Harrison Ford movie right after he did Raiders and right after he did the Star Wars stuff. And it was he came out with Mosquito Coast, and it was just a bizarre movie, and Ice equals Civilization. And Martha Plimpton played his daughter in that movie. And she was just freaky weird. Her most memorable line was, "I think of you when I pee." "I think of you when I go to the bathroom." That was the line. "I think of you when I go to the bathroom." And I'm like, it was just creepy, creepy weird. And I was 16 when I saw that movie, and she creeped me out, and I've never liked her since. And now, for some reason, on Raising Hope, I really like Martha Plimpton. I like the whole show. I enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. Anyway, doesn't matter. The whole point is, I finally got rid of cable television. We're living off of Netflix and Amazon Prime and YouTube. And my son's, I still haven't, he was going to let us borrow his Hulu Plus account for a little bit, because he still technically lives here. So even though he's off at college, this is still his official residence, and I don't feel bad about borrowing his Hulu Plus account just to try it out and see what it's going to get us, because I also don't mind paying the $9 or $10 a month or $12 or whatever it is now for Hulu Plus. I have no problem with paying that if it's going to give me some added advantage above already having Amazon Prime and Netflix. So I'm going to try that out. Still haven't done it yet. I should have him. He's coming home in like an hour. God, I should have him do that. I need to write that down in my pocket mod. Hold on. Jacob Hulu. See, I have the pocket mod right in front of me because obviously we're doing a show. So Hulu. Got it. All right. Got anything else on Roku? I don't think I do. I think that's it. So that means what's up next? Let me look at my list. Oh, no. Get the little ones out of the room and make sure you're sitting down for this.
Nerd rage came flashing back, and I just looked at him and went, Rrr!
That's right. It's time for some nerd rage. My nerd rage just made me have to take a drink. Hold on. I can't do that to my voice. Restaurants. Here's my one gripe lately, and it's something that has just overtaken me in the last month. Restaurants who don't have a decent presence on the web. What is wrong with you people? Do you know what year this is? I know not everybody is tech savvy. I know that, but it doesn't take that much. And here's what I want from you. I want to find you on Google and pull up your website. And on your website, I want to see where you are located, your hours of operation, and your menu. That's all I want to see. Okay? Now, if you want to throw up your specials for me, or you want to tell me about your events that are coming up, or if you want to give me all sorts of other stuff, then put that in the sidebar. Put that out of my way. Put it somewhere where I can find it if I want it, but I don't have to look at it. All right? Don't show me a slideshow of stuff before I ask for anything. Don't do anything. Just look. All I want is I want where you're located, your hours of operation, and your menu. Oh, your location is also going to include a phone number in case I want to call you, but that's all I want. All right? I have come to find in the last 6 months that when I go out to a restaurant, especially a restaurant I've never been to before, but sometimes it's even if, you know, oh, well, I'm running over to Taco Bell to grab some stuff really quick. What do you guys want? Pull up the menu online. Everyone finds what they want, and we know, all right? If I'm going to go to a restaurant I've never been to before, especially if I'm taking the kids with me, look, we look it up online. We get them prepped and go, hey, look, here's where we're going. Here's the kind of stuff that they have. What do you think? And get them prepped and excited before we get there. Just let me see. You know, let me find out from your website, is this place going to be too pricey for me? I mean, do I really want to pay, you know, $19 for whatever it is you're offering me? Let me take a look at it. That's all I want. It's not that hard. It's not that hard. Do that for me, and don't put in all the bells and whistles in a place that's going to be obnoxious. If you want bells and whistles, have bells and whistles. Just put them off to the side. Keep them out of my way. I mean, honestly, people, where you're located, your hours of operation, and your menu. And I'd love for the menu to have prices on it. All right, I'm talking about, I want to see your menu. I just want to know what I'm getting when I get there. I don't, how did I ever live in a world that didn't let me look up a restaurant's menu online? And how did I get to the point from there to where I'm angry when I can't see it? That is crazy. But come on, people, it's not that tough. In fact, Yancey is swearing up and down that you can make some decent money. Even in a little town like ours, you can make some decent money just maintaining websites for restaurants. Set up a little business, go around to a bunch of people who feel that they aren't tech savvy, but they do have their business and they want to maintain a web presence, and go to the, because don't give me a Facebook page. Good God, that I hate. I hate when I go search for them online and all I get is a Facebook page. A Facebook page that it sometimes has the hours of operation, the location. It sometimes has the information I'm looking for, but I can never find a menu there. No. Instead of a menu, all I find is I scroll through your timeline and I find lots of people commenting about your restaurant, which is handy, but that's not what I'm looking for. I find lots of pictures of your food that you've posted. I don't, just give me your menu. Don't do it on Facebook. All right. So Yancey's thinking that go around to these restaurants, these people who run a decent business, but for whatever reason, haven't done the website, and then just maintain websites for them. That's it. And you can make some decent money. You just charge them a low fee, right? Something, because really, once you get it set up for them, and you'll just use some real basic packaged website for them. I mean, it's not like it's that tough. You get it set up, and then, you know, once a week you send out a standard email that says, hey, what are your specials this week? You got any events coming up? Do I need to update your menu? And 95% of the time, they either won't respond to you, and then you don't have to do anything, or they'll send back and go, no, we're fine this week, and then you don't have to do anything. I mean, that's it. You just send out your automated emails once a week, and out of the, you know, if you're maintaining websites for 10 businesses, then, you know, maybe one of them will have some stuff that, oh, yeah, 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 we've got a new phone number, or, oh, yeah, we added something to our menu, or whatever they're going to do. I mean, really, really little amount of work for what you're going to get. And again, just be a nice little bit of side money. That's it. You know, I mean, again, there's other headaches involved, I'm sure. Nothing's ever as simple as it seems, but someone who was dedicated and was willing to put in that, you know, a few extra hours outside of their regular job to earn a little extra cash, not a bad idea. Honestly. Anyway, that's enough of my nerd rage. Honestly, did you give me your location, your hours of operation, and your menu? That's all I want. It's not tough. Okay, enough of that. Seriously, we've come to the end of the meticulously potted portion of this podcast. What that means is it's time for R2 and the Pod-O-Matic! Hot dog? I'm not looking at the right page. Yes, it is! Hot dog! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You personally, the listeners, sitting right there. No. This is not a general you. This is not a sense of dispersed responsibility where you think, oh, Mike has, you know, literally tens of listeners. Certainly someone else will send Pod-O-Matic entries. No, I mean you personally. You want to hear me have a rant about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on our forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, send me a private message with your Pod-O-Matic questions. I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. Did I sound desperate? Did I sound a little desperate? I might have. Okay. We're down to 110. This week. So we've still got enough to fill out the whole list. I've got a whole 100. I don't have to modify R2's dice at all. We're good. But, you know, after this week, I could probably use a couple more. You know, 1, 2. Send me 5 or 6. That's all I'm asking. Anyway, you guys have always come through for me. I'm not even worried about it. You guys are great and spectacular. And the first number here is a 38. So let's see what's on the Pod-O-Matic list for today. 38 comes from a Mrs. Darks. Sweet. Mrs. Darks says, is there any trait or characteristics you put into every character you create? Maybe. If so, what is it? Okay. I really like characters who are intelligent. I like characters who are intelligent, and to go along with that, I like characters who are skilled. I've always been drawn to the jack-of-all-trades character. It's why I'm drawn to bards. It's why one of my favorite Shadowrun characters I never got to play was called Trade Jack, and Trade Jack was designed to run Skillsoft. He's got the Skillsoft software in his head, and he's got a high level of it, and all he does is he has all sorts of cartridges and, you need a helicopter pilot? It's just like Neo from The Matrix, although it was Trinity that got the helicopter piloting. I plug in the right cartridge, boom, I can fly your helicopter. You need a gun guy? Great, there's my gun skill. I'm never the best at what I do, but I can do anything you want. Right, I love that. And in a lot of games, intelligence is tied to how many skills you have. So I like characters who are intelligent, and I make almost all of my characters have above average intelligence, if not a really high intelligence, because I really enjoy that in the people I play. I like playing smart people. However, there is an exception. I did play Dimmy, who was my stupid druid, And Dimmy was, well, he was weak and he was uncoordinated and he was stupid and he was uncharismatic. And I mean, he had wisdom and he had constitution and he had nothing else. Dimmy was dumb as a box of rocks. And even then, and he was fun to play. I had so much fun in that game, but he was a challenge. And I mean, Dimmy was, it was really hard for me to play someone who was not smart, and especially someone who's not smart, but he had amazingly high wisdom. So therefore, he always had a good idea of what the right thing to do was, but couldn't always justify why it was the right thing to do. He was very much a Forrest Gump character in that way. Forrest always wound up being in the right place at the right time. Forrest was a good man. He had a good moral center and knew the right thing to do, generally. But he was dumb as a post. All right, and he's an exaggerated version of it. But then so was Dimmy. I Samwise. That's my email address. Samwise Gamgee. Samwise was not the brightest halfling, not a hobbit, but he was wise. He was the moral center. He was the Jiminy Cricket, the conscience, the stalwart support. That sort of thing has some appeal for me, and Dimmy is the first time I've ever played that, and it was really difficult for me. And there are many, many times that Dimmy played way smarter than he should have because I just couldn't help myself. So probably intelligence. Intelligence is the one thing that I include in almost every character I have. The skills, I like being very skilled, having lots of jack-of-all-trades kind of things. And boots of striding and leaping. Oh, that is my favorite magic item in all of Dungeons & Dragons and Pathfinder is the boots of striding and leaping. They let you go a little bit faster, and they let you jump a little bit higher. And I love those boots. I don't know what it is about them. I don't know why I fixate on them with every character I create. So anytime I have created a character that's high enough level, in D&D Pathfinder, obviously, any character I've ever created for myself who is a high enough level to have starting magic items, you know, so anyone who's third, fourth, fifth level or higher or when they start have always had boots of striding and leaping immediately when I create the character. It's something that the investment always seems worth it for the kind of characters I create. I love having that. And then for characters that don't start off at that high level, I'm always wishing I had them. Is Dothan ever going to get a pair of boots of striding and leaping? I have no idea. She will, very soon have the acrobatic skill to make it beneficial. And what character couldn't use an extra 10 feet of movement every round? Holy crap. I would love for Dothan to have a pair of boots of striding and leaping. This is my favorite magic item ever. So that's an excellent question. Great. 33. And 38 was number one. 33 is number two. 33 is from Ronster. Hey, it's another Christmas question from Ronster. He sent me quite a few that were holiday themed because it was the holidays. And again, he was trying to encourage me to podcast over the holidays and I failed him, but I'm leaving those questions in. And Ron says, have you ever spent Christmas alone? How did you spend your days? And the answer is no, I have never been alone on Christmas ever. I mean, my first 22 years, I think, all the way through college, were all spent with my family, my mom and dad and my brothers. Every one of them didn't miss one. Even when they were in Japan, I flew out to Japan every year while they were there and spent Christmas with them. And in fact, the last year, the year before I got married, my wife-to-be flew with me to Japan and we had a blast. It was so much fun. So, and then since then, immediately after that, I got married. And I've spent every Christmas with my wife and then later with my children and my wife. And sometimes it's with her parents. Sometimes it's been with my parents. But in general, no, I've always had someone there with me for Christmas. I'm a very, very fortunate man. I have no complaints in that respect. 84. 84 is from Mrs. Darks again. Awesome. Mrs. Darks says, Your wife is obviously awesome. Yes, she is. Thank you. I don't see a question there. Well, let's move on. No. Your wife is obviously awesome. In nerdy terms, how are you and she different? Oh, all right. If I understand your question, look, I'm way nerdier than she is. My wife did not begin as a nerd. She may have viewed herself as something of an outsider from high school and college. She may have, you know, but never a nerd. Nerd was just not something that was in her wheelhouse at that time. But as we have, you know, we've known each other for 25 years now, and we've been married for most of that, and she has learned to appreciate our nerd culture, and she's learned to enjoy many of our nerdy pursuits, and she's really, really cool about it that way. I mean, it's not just, you know, it's not just that she's humoring me and playing along because, you know, I'm her husband and she feels like she has to. No, she genuinely enjoys, she loves watching the superhero comic book movies with me, with us. She loves playing Munchkin, and she kicks our ass on a regular basis at Munchkin. She's really good at it. She has played Paranoia with us, and yeah, I mean, just all sorts of stuff goes on and on. And it's because of our shared love of stuff. And there's many things that she introduced me to that or got me to spend a little more time with. I mean, like, for example, what would normally be labeled as chick flicks. I have a real love for certain of them. There's certain romantic comedies and you know, stereotypical chick flick kinds of things that that when we first got together, she would pick more of those and I would pick more of the standard guy fare. And now we kind of cross over and we just sort of do the same sort of stuff. I mean, again, 10 Things I Hate About You, still one of my favorite movies. It's one of those, I've said it before, if I'm flipping through channels and 10 Things I Hate About You is on, I'm watching it. Really? It just started? Okay, I'm watching it. Oh, it's almost to the end, right? To the big, you know, climactic 10 Things I Hate About You moment. Oh, yeah, I'm watching it. It doesn't matter when I pick up. I have to watch that movie. It's weird. 51st States, same thing. And, I mean, she's introduced me to all sorts of books and literature I wouldn't have touched otherwise. Anyway, it's a back and forth. And I think the nerd side of the force is a little bit stronger. We're just a very nerd family, and as our kids have gotten older and they're all very nerd-centric, we've just gotten involved in that. I mean, hold on. I say she wasn't really a nerd before I met her, but she did play the accordion. Yeah, I may have to reevaluate this. Holy crap. I can't play any instrument, much less the accordion. Oh, man. Oh, speaking of accordion. Oh, God. Weird Al Yankovic is coming to town. He's not my town, but like within driving distance for me. Oh, he just announced his tour dates. The tickets aren't on sale yet. In fact, they haven't even announced when I can buy the tickets. But Weird Al Yankovic is going to be in Council Bluffs, Iowa in, what, June? July. July 2nd, I think. Oh, it's crazy. Crazy. I cannot. I've got to go see Weird Al. I've got to. And he's playing at a little venue. It's in Council Bluffs. It's at Stir Cove is the venue. And Stir Cove is an outdoor venue, and it's not very big. And I've seen bands there before, and I think we paid $35 or $40 for tickets last time. Oh, be still my heart if I could get Weird Al tickets for $40. Would that not be amazing? Holy crap. Because I think last time we saw Weird Al, it was four of us going, and I think we paid just over $300 for four of us to see Weird Al, and that was 10 years ago. So, I mean, holy crap. I'm really hoping, because I would love for it to be affordable enough that I could take the little kids to go see it. I mean, yeah, obviously, look, me and Lisa want to go, and the big kids would love to go, but the little kids have never seen Weird Al in concert, and they love Weird Al. And, oh, wow, I am just – it's too much to hope for. We've got a busy summer. We always have a busy summer, and I don't know if it's going to happen, But, fingers crossed. I'll keep you posted, obviously. But, Weird Al. Great concert. But really, have you ever seen Weird Al in concert? This man will give you your money's worth. Even at $100 a ticket, he will give you your money's worth. Because this guy is a performer. He is absolutely a performer, and he is nonstop, and he entertained the crap out of us. I love Weird Al. Anyway, enough of that. R2. You bet. Number 20. 20 is from Akiva. Hey, Akiva, good to see you. Akiva says, you've been given dictatorial power over the U.S. for 6 months. What do you do? Whew, that is a hard question. There are three possible answers. One, I abuse my powers just enough to make sure that me and my wife and kids are taken care of for the rest of our lives. That's selfish. But come on. I mean, it's only 6 months, and then I've got to live with the consequences of that, and it would be nice with whatever goes on that, hey, maybe I get mine back out of this, right? Right? All right, R2, potentially I go in there and I make serious drastic change. I actually take all the things that Obama promised to do before he went in and then actually do them. Maybe I actually do something about limiting the power of the NSA, and maybe actually restore some teeth to the Bill of Rights and actually restore some semblance of the right to privacy and the right to freely assemble and the right to, now I know right to privacy is not specifically enumerated, but come on, people. All right. Maybe I do all that, but then I think I'm asking to get myself assassinated because I know it's dictatorial power, but I'm presuming that I only get my dictatorial power for 6 months. And then after it's done, am I handing it over to another dictator, or do we go back to democracy? Because I can't hand it over to another dictator. That's terrible. So I have to assume we're going back to business as usual after I'm done. Am I smart enough to enact all this radical change and set up safeguards to ensure that those last for at least a little while? Can I do that? Or am I just asking to get myself shot? Yeah, that's dangerous. Or, I could play it safe and just play ball and lay low and make it business as usual. And once my six-month term as dictator is up, hey, I'm back home and things are fine and nobody's looking to kill me. Options one and options three are not mutually exclusive. I think if I play ball and it's business as usual, I may well give me enough to be set up for the rest of my life. Oof. Boy, but I'd feel really bad about myself if I had all that power and didn't actually do something with it. I'm going to have to do something with it. Damn you. Oh, but I would feel obligated to enact some radical change. And that's just, boy, that's so dangerous. Oh, man. Oh, but I feel obligated. Well, fortunately, You know what? This is all hypothetical. So therefore, I can say whatever I want. I don't have to be realistic about it. You know what? Free ice cream for everybody. 63 is from... Hey, it's Ronster. So nice. Ronster says, if you were given the role of Jar Jar Binks in the Star Wars Episode 1 reboot, would you do it? Hell yes, I would. Oh, God. See, ask me if I want to be dictator of the U.S. I'm torn. But you ask me if I want to be Jar Jar Binks? You bet I would. Oh, absolutely. Now, are you saying, in hindsight, if I could go back and put myself in the role of Jar Jar Binks? Well, hell no, of course not now. I mean, knowing what Jar Jar Binks represents and knowing how much people hate him and how people universally think that he's one of the biggest problems with the prequel Star Wars movies, which, by the way, he is far from the biggest problem with the prequels. That the lack of a coherent Star Wars-like action story is really the biggest problem. Jar Jar is just, he's an Ewok. He's a symptom. He's not, there's not, all right. So, yeah, knowing what Jar Jar became and what he represents, no, of course I wouldn't do it. But if you're asking me, when they came around and said, hey, we have a role in Star Wars for you, would you like to play it? Hell yes, I don't care what it is. Of course I'd want to play it. And I'd read the script and go, well, that doesn't sound so bad because I'm reading the script and I've got stars in my eyes because I get to be in Star Wars. And I wouldn't realize what a horrible, potentially racist mockery this guy is. No, that wouldn't occur to me at all. I would take the role and I'd take the money and I'd be thrilled about it. Oh, that would be awesome. 19 is Mrs. Darks again. The woman dominates. Oh, and it's a long one. All right, let's start from the top. What is up with bicyclists, dude? All right, I'll keep going. I think this may be a nerd rage. What's up with bicyclists, dude? She called me dude. I'm all for biking. I think it's great. However, I work in a city with bike lanes, so all the car lanes are super narrow, but I follow the law and expect the same, but bikes seem to think they can weave in between cars, even with the lanes. Then I walk into work, and there are bikes on the sidewalks of the same street. Where are they supposed to be, and why am I always in their way? Side note, talking about adults here, I want little ones on the sidewalk where it's safer for them. Okay, I did not read that with the proper inflection because I've not read this question before because it was way too long for me to review. But okay, bikes suck. All right, I'll grant you that. I do not have any experience with this myself. Biking is not as huge around here. Biking here is a recreation, and much less a mode of transportation. I don't live in a big enough city where I have to worry about all this. But yeah, look, it's just people who are inconsiderate. And, the only real experience I have is being in Japan, driving in Tokyo, riding around in Tokyo and watching the motorcycles. It's motorcycles and scooters and it's motorized bikes. I mean, there's also a lot of bicycles. So the bike racks were enormous. Holy crap. But, in overall volume, obviously, look, it was just really, really long bike racks that could accommodate hundreds of bikes. I didn't mean enormous bike racks as in they were like 15 feet tall, although that would have been cool. But I didn't notice the bikes in Japan so much as the motorcycles and the scooters, and they were horrifying because Tokyo is nothing but traffic congestion. It's nothing but traffic jam half the time. And so therefore the solution for many is you get yourself a bike, you get yourself a motorcycle and you just drive in between the lanes. And they certainly do. And they weave in and out and they drive wherever they want and they get hit a lot because, well, they're in the way and not paying attention. And you get the sense that they think they're above the law. And I don't even know what the motorcycle rules are in Japan. So I can't even tell you if they were breaking the law, but boy, it sure looked like they were. Doing exactly the sort of things you describe, but on a motorized bike instead of just a regular bicycle. And it was crazy. And yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it. It's so dangerous. They're really putting themselves at risk when they pull that. And it's just inconsiderate. You gotta learn to be polite. I mean, like I say, I have not experienced what you have experienced, but I fully support you in your very tempered rage that you expressed there. So I wish I could do more for you. But sadly, I can't. People are going to be rude. All we can do is be polite in return and hope it rubs off, I guess. I got nothing. 61. Gosh, sometimes I like it better when the dice actually get stuck and I don't have to keep rolling up and down the pages all the time. Jesus. All right, here we are. 61. Oh, hold on. I have a phone call. Anyway, number 61. Oh, number 61 is from Billy Bob. And Billy Bob says, hold on, I gotta get back to the page. Billy Bob says, pick 5 X-Men and write them as Pathfinder characters. Seriously, dude? Got 5? Yo, 5? God, that's a lot of work. All right, let's do it. 5 X-Men, and who would they be if they were in Pathfinder? All right, we'll start with the easy one. Obviously, Wolverine is going to be written as a barbarian. That's clear. All right, I got no problem with that. Potentially, you could do him as a monk, I suppose. But nah, he's got the uncontrolled rage. He's got to be barbarian. So we do Wolverine first. And then we go with, who do I want to do next? Nightcrawler. Nightcrawler is a rogue shadow dancer. That one was easy too, wasn't it? You take him up to rogue, maybe even throw in a level of fighter if you want. Or again, these are superheroes, so they all do hand-to-hand fighting. So if you want to throw in the monk, you certainly can. But I assume that if we're putting them in Pathfinder, then they're no longer just doing plain old fisticuffs and they wind up with weapons. Kurt would definitely do the rogue thing until he could start taking the Shadow Dancer levels, and then he'd be a Shadow Dancer, and he'd be really good at it. So Wolverine, Nightcrawler, let's see, what do I got? It's not like I don't know X-Men characters. I know X-Men. I'm just saying I'm trying to think of which ones would be the best ones for what I'm for doing this. All right, let's go with Kitty Pryde, Shadow Cat, if you prefer. Kitty Pryde would be, she's stealthy and roguelike, but no, you know what? She'd be a sorcerer. She'd be a sorcerer. She doesn't have the physical prowess necessarily, she'd be a sorcerer and probably with an elemental air bloodline on her, something like that. Then we do Storm. Storm's a druid, straight up. That one's easy. And since clearly I'm working from the 1980s, early 90s version of the X-Men that was my favorite when I was reading comics, let's pick someone else from that group to round out this team. And, we could do Professor X. He'd be the wizard. But I'm avoiding Cyclops, but maybe I should just take Cyclops. Cyclops would be, I honestly think he would go Paladin. That's just his style. I mean, he's not so much the religion, but he does have that moral center. He was the lawful good, the leader, the natural, you know, that was his job. So I'll do Cyclops as a Paladin. I can do that. If you're going to be Cyclops, though, and you're going to be a Pathfinder version of Cyclops, what mount would he have? Maybe I'll leave that for the forums. What mount does he ride? Because all of these, and you know, if you want to actually mimic the powers that they have within, because I'm just going with the spirit of the character. But if you want to actually mimic the powers, then it's just a matter of getting, you know, the proper spells and magic items to make their superpowers work. But no, I'm assuming, Billy Bob, you mean, you know, in the spirit of them, if Wolverine, you know, like dressing up your Star Wars characters as steampunk or whatever, if you're going to set the X-Men in a Pathfinder setting. Yeah, what are they going to take? What are they going to look like? So that's the best I got. We could do more online, I suppose. 89 is from Humongous. Hey, all right, Humongous. Is this going to be about Kurosawa? Let's see. Oh, does the 1963 film Jason and the Argonauts still hold up? I don't know. I've never seen Jason and the Argonauts. I don't think I've seen Jason and the Argonauts. Hold on. This is what we have Google for. Look at this. IMDb is already open. Sweet. Should I pause it instead of making you guys listen to me type? I don't know. Jason and the... There it is. 1963. Todd Armstrong. Nancy... I lost the name. Nancy Kovac. And... Oh. Okay. That looks familiar at least. But, boy, I got nothing on this one. I mean, I really got nothing on this, so I cannot tell you if I've seen it or not seen it, but since it's listed in here with, if you liked this, you'd also like The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad. You'd like to see The Adventures of Gulliver. You'd like to see three other Sinbad movies. Then yeah, I'm going to guess it does not hold up. Again, never seen it, but Let me put on my amazing Kreskin hat and go, yeah, no, that dude, seriously, look how cheesy that is. Seriously, I don't care if the story's any good, because it may or may not be. I have no idea how well they told this story. I don't care if the acting's good, because it may or may not be. I have no idea. I've never seen Jason and the Argonauts. But this is an action movie. This is a Greek-Roman historical epic with, you know, a Hydra or a Cyclops or a, there's got to be all sorts of monsters in there. And guess what? They all look fake and cheesy. They all look bad. Just plain bad. And again, I have no proof of this, but I'm pretty sure I'm right. 06. And 06 is going to be the end of us today. Let's go up and see what that one is. 06 is also from Humongous. Hey, all right. It says, have you read the Elric books? Oh, no. I'm sorry, man. Our cultural references, our touchstones are just not in sync today, dude. I've never read the Elric books. Should I? You think so? Would the books make a cool movie? I'm going to imagine yes, because look, you can take any property and you can make a good movie out of it. It's just a matter of getting the right team. Do you have the right team and the right money and the right creative process to make a good movie out of it? Because if I understand correctly, is Elric's like some sort of anti-hero, right? I mean, Elric's like a character of questionable morals, maybe even evil. I don't know. I have a picture of Elric as an anti-hero in my head. And hey, you know we love anti-heroes. All right, they're kind of going a little bit out of fashion now. It's not like not like the turn of the millennium, but a good anti-hero story can really, really work. And it would be a cool way to tell a fantasy tale. And not like Conan the Barbarian, who was just plain old brutal. I mean, he had really no real internal character or motivation in the Conan movies. He was just a brute and really hard to, you know, you're watching it for the fun action. That's really all it is. Whereas Elric, if I understand correctly, is a little darker and more twisted and more interesting. And maybe I'm thinking of the wrong guy, but I'm pretty sure I'm thinking of the right guy. I could look it up, but I told you this was the last one, so I'm just going to get all lazy about it. But I'm going to say, sorry I've never read it. Let me know if I should read it right after I watch all of the Kurosawa movies. Let me know. I'm not watching Jason the Argonauts. You can't make me. But yes, I am pretty sure it would make a cool movie. It would have to, wouldn't it? It would have to. All right. Anyway, that's the end of the Podomatic. And so therefore, we just got to turn to GLaDOS for a recap of this week's episode.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio, and it still says 2014 on my sheet. One of these days I'm going to read it wrong. But not yet. Not today, Zerg. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week is Weezer's In the Garage, and She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner. All these songs are available on iTunes. You check them out, you buy them, you enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you want to do something nice for this podcast, recommend it to a friend. If you enjoy it, then please, please, please spread the word and let other people enjoy it. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on my free games page, Instant Game, Animal Ball, Melee, Sandbox Hill, 2/3 of a dozen others, all free, all the time. You want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio. Promise I will actually respond to you, or find me on Twitter, where my handle is @nerdprideradio, or even check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be totally honest, the very best way to get in touch with me is to come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, you send me a private message, we'll hang out together, we'll become best friends in the world, we'll have fun. And now it's time for Listener Betrayal. And you know what happens when you record a podcast at 5 o'clock on a work day? Nobody shows up for Listener Betrayal. Yeah, I suspected that this would happen. I mean, this is rush hour. People are getting home. People are getting supper. People are not online. I'm in a rare situation. My wife is working late. The kids are still at school. They decided to all stay up there and hang out with friends, do other stuff. And so therefore, I've got the house to myself until everyone gets home in about 30 minutes, and I figured this would be a great time to get a podcast squeezed in. And that means that nobody was on my website, so nobody came by to give us anything for the listener betrayal segment. I'm sorry, dudes. You know what we can do to make up for that, though? Oh, my God. We can turn to R2, who rolled me a double zero. Double aught, people. This is portentous. Is that a word, portentous? Pertaining to portending? I assume so. 00 is from Ronster. And Ronster says, do you send out Christmas cards? No. Never. My wife has always wanted to send out Christmas cards. She did at first, at least. And I don't know if I just crushed that dream in her or if she just finally decided that it wasn't really worth her time. But we've never sent out Christmas cards. So, would it be cool? I don't know. Maybe. I guess. I've just never done it. And it's weird because we get Christmas cards. Obviously, everybody gets Christmas cards. Even if you're not Christian, even if you're not celebrating Christmas, you probably still get Christmas cards. And at least if you live in the United States of America and you've ever met people. But we have Christmas cards that come to us from people who clearly we got put on a Christmas card list somewhere. And we don't know these people anymore. They're not even Facebook friends anymore. We never see them. We never hang out. But boy, we get a Christmas card every year. There's two of them that do that. One is from a guy who I suspect is mentally handicapped to some degree. And he met my wife at some point in the past. I don't know the details. But he sends us a Christmas card every year. And I'm guessing that he's mentally handicapped just from the handwriting. I'm just imagining. I could be wrong. Maybe he has some horrible muscular disease that hasn't degenerated or progressed or changed at all in the last 23 years. That could happen. I don't know. But we get a card from him every year, and then there's another one. And it's someone that my wife knew somewhere way back, I guess. I don't know. Hold on. Let me answer this. Well, you want me to answer it live? Let's do that. Hey, what's up? Oh, really? Okay, well then that's fine. I'll wait here and I'll start supper. All right, awesome. Ha! Okay, then you tell her that I will stay here. I will not come up and see her. And if her lover wants to stop by, that will be just fine. I will never know the difference. Spaghetti. All right, bye. I love you. Well, see, that wasn't even worth staying live for. That was my second son, Aiden, and anyway, it doesn't matter. The whole point was we had this thing worked out. The kids were apparently finished up. They were going to come home, and then Lisa was going to stay up at school and keep working because she's got lesson plans to do, and then I'd just go up and meet her later, and we'd hang out together and help get all of her work done because we've got we're going out of town this weekend. We've got a big party coming up. And you guys don't need the whole explanation, do you? Anyway, that was them. And then, of course, the joke was, don't bother coming up here. I'll just come home on my own. And so I said, okay, that's fine. And then my son, the 17-year-old, says, yeah, she says it's okay. You don't need to come up here because if you do, then her lover can't stop by anyway. Ah, damn, got me. So anyway, that was the joke, and I've just made it really unfunny by explaining it. But you know what? That's what happens when you guys don't fill me in for listener betrayal. You leave me trying to fill for time like this. Is this what you wanted? Is this what you want? Probably you did. You guys are perverts like that. All right. One more? Yeah, what the hell. Let's do one more. 03. All right, I can do that one. All the way at the opposite end of this list, 03 is from Sirius Paul. Oh, my Sirius Paul. I have not heard from you in ages. Sirius Paul says, have you ever been in a girl's locker room? Well, yeah, sure. Sure, why not? Probably many, many times in my life. There's been at least one tornado drill, or maybe not even a drill, maybe it was an actual tornado coming through, where the bathrooms, locker rooms were the tornado shelter. And I know I went into a girls' locker room for that. My wife works at a school and they don't even use the locker rooms anymore, but they still have a girls' locker room and a boys' locker room off the gym. But now that the school is just an elementary school, they don't use the locker rooms for changing. The kids don't change for gym. PE, I guess, phys ed now. And so therefore they use it for storage. I've been in that locker room many times just to get stuff out of storage when, you know, we're helping set up for events or whatever. Let's see. What other times have I been in a girls' locker room? I don't know. I've never been in a girls' locker room as an adult, at least. Maybe when I was a kid, maybe my mom took me into the girls' locker room when I was little. I don't think that would have happened, and I don't remember it happening. But it's potential, I guess. But other than that, I don't think I've ever been in a girls' locker room that was actually being used as a locker room by girls at the time that I was in it. I mean, all the things that I've done would have been completely legitimate that I'm actually passing through for whatever reason. Although I did, actually, I was at camp. I was at Boy Scout camp. Well, okay, Mike, where are you going with this? Where's there a girls' locker room at Boy Scout camp? Well, let me tell you. I was at Boy Scout camp, and it's a week-long camp. Going again this summer. Looking forward to it. And I'm at Boy Scout camp, and I have a lot of free time. You know, I'm a leader. I have to be there for some things. But the other things, the kids are taking classes and working on badges and doing all sorts of stuff. And so there's a lot of parts of the day where I have a lot of free time. And so I spent a lot of time hiking. I found all the trails that they have. I've measured them all out. I've done mileage charts and visited new sites and seen all sorts of cool things. And at one point, I'm stumbling through the woods on one of my hikes. And I come across an old army barracks. And the thing is decrepit. It's fallen apart. But it's an old army barracks. And so, okay, well, hey, I love looking at old abandoned stuff. I go wandering up there and I try the first door I come to. It's open. Okay. I step on in and I realize that I am standing in the residence for the female staff that work at the camp, because the camp has all sorts of, and it's mostly, you know, teenagers from, you know, 15 to maybe up to beyond teenagers, up to about 20, 22. So, you know, mostly high school and college kids that will work the camp as staff. And there's a lot of girls as well as guys who work as staff at this camp. And it never occurred to me to wonder where the girls, went at night. I had no idea where they stayed, where their residence was, because most of the staff residences are hidden away from the kids, from the scouts, because they don't want scouts, you know, stumbling through and bothering them when they're not on duty. And there's a certain privacy that goes with it and a mystique about it. And so the location of the residences are not public knowledge. And so here I've come across this old army barracks, and it looked like an abandoned building. For all the world, from the outside, I would have swore it was an abandoned building. I open the door, I step in, and I realize I'm in a room. I mean, like, I walk right into what is essentially the one room that these three girls all share. And then I realize that, oh, there's doors that go all the way down. So there's, you know, similar rooms like this all the way down. And I'm standing there in their room with, there's their unmade beds, and there's their clothes and their sundries laid around everywhere. And it was such a violation of privacy. I felt so horrible because I'm like, oh crap, I should not be here. Oh, this is so wrong. This is so, and I got myself out really, really quick because there was no one there. They were all, this was again, middle of the day. I've got free time. They're all working. So it's not like anyone was going to be coming around. This is way off in the woods. There's no way any of those girls would be heading back to their barracks in the middle of the stinking day, because it's, you know, 15, 20 minute walk to get out there. And then they'd have to 15, 20 minutes back to, you know, work in the lunch area or out at the pool or whatever it is that they do. So it's not like I was in danger of anyone walking in on me, but it felt so wrong. Like I was violating something. And it was not at all intentional. And yet, man, I felt so guilty about it. It was just weird. And so I immediately got out and got the hell away. But I did get to mark it on my map because, hey, it was one more thing that I found. So that part was cool. So anyway, yeah, that's enough for the day. How about you just say goodnight, R2? Thank you, sir.